Hello. Welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Heckner, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. In-season tournament quarterfinals are here. David, I love the fact that the NBA, and this is obviously for rest situation, make sure nobody's on the front end of back, or second end of a back-to-back. No games on Sunday. The only games tonight are the two of the quarterfinal matchups. And then we'll have tomorrow on Tuesday, the other two quarterfinal matchups. So actually, those teams who did not make it, those coaches are probably like, well, we didn't play well enough to make it, but we're getting a couple extra rest days and maybe some practice time mixed in there.
I mean, there's no question that that's a benefit. I actually kind of told all my guys that aren't playing the tournament, like, you know, I'll check in on Monday or Tuesday, like take a couple mental health days.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
Yeah, it's a gift. Well, because you talked about this on the last show, how, you know, so it's, and of course, the physical matters, which we know, but it's the mental grind of an 82-game season that wears on these guys.
Yeah, it's the combination, too, is, you know, how your body feels. Like, one of the first things I always ask any player I talk to is how you feeling physically. That sometimes will give me a key to what's going on mentally. One guy said to me yesterday, his legs are just dead. And, yeah, I get that. Yeah. So this is a chance to heal, recover, right? Yeah. Refresh, recharge, all those things.
Exactly. Yeah. No, 100%. And we're going to break down all those matchups for you guys shortly, but we're going to first start off with Ask Coach Thorpe. Again, if you guys want to tap into David Thorpe's big basketball brain, please send us questions at truehoop@truehoop.com. That is T-R-U-E-H-O-O-P at truehoop.com. All right, David, I don't know if you saw this, but The Athletic, you know, when they send out like emails and it'll be like links of like the stories that they have that they're talking about today or whatever. One of the subject lines in an email over the weekend basically said that NBA defense is worse than ever. And this fan of ours, Rich, wants to know. The author goes on to say offensive skills are way up. Rules and more open court today favor offense over defense. But the author still puts out the idea that NBA defense and defenders are bad, which seems both wrong and fodder for NBA dum-dum fans to cry about how if only the pros tried as hard as those gritty college kids. But, Rich says, scoring is way up. So what gives? So is it a lot of offense and bad defense? Or is it, no, defense is good, but these are the best players in the world. People are going to score.
I mean, it's a lot. It's all the, it's the, it's a big stew full of everything. When in doubt, run a guy over. That'll be a blocking foul. You get two free throws for that. So the refs have their say in this as well. It's, in my opinion, coaches afraid to coach guys. You have coaches who kiss the ass of their lottery picks who are struggling. They kiss the ass of the lottery picks who aren't struggling. So the lottery picks get a lot of ass kissing going on. You have assistant coaches that just want to keep their job. They don't offer much. They don't challenge much. Obviously, there's exceptions to everything. But that's a lot of what I see, a lot of incompetent coaches. A lot of fearful coaches. They might be competent, but are afraid to really coach guys up, hold guys accountable. I did see video recently of Rick Carlisle calling timeout and basically screaming at Ben Mathurin. Well, in the world I come from, I just bench dudes. And I tell coaches that I advise all the time, just take guys out. You don't have to yell at them. Take them out when they don't do what they're supposed to do. You don't see a lot of that. You don't see much of that at all. You don't want to embarrass someone. You can wait for a timeout, whatever, make the change. But so those are factors. Guys try hard all the time, commonly, but they pick their moments also when they play too many minutes. There's also a situation where this game is so open, so spread out. And so defensively, we're in position, the players are in position of weakness. And when you try to make a play at a position of weakness, the angle isn't great. And there's contact, they call a foul almost always, especially against a good player or a star. And how do you build your resume so you can build your value so you can get paid more money when you're on the bench with foul trouble? You can't. Or the other option is kind of fake compete a little bit. Let them make the layup with my hands up, whatever. Take the risk of fouling out of the equation. And maybe they'll miss, but probably not, depending on the angle. And I can keep playing and build my numbers up. So it's a pretty easy thing to do. Players are going to choose not to foul in that situation. College guys will foul. They're even dumber because in college, they'll miss that shot all the time. And then also, it's true that we have incredibly skilled. I mean, like, has anyone watched Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid play basketball? How about 6'8" Luka Doncic, right? LeBron James, I mean, it never ends. Tyrese Halliburton is a hard guy to guard. He wasn't even a good scorer in college. He is now. So that factors in. We have more players that are more skilled. Everyone's talking about ball movement and 0.5 and all of that. Easier said than done, but once they get it, it makes it very tough. And I think lastly, we don't have a lot of teams built with the kind of defenders Boston's built with. And I think that's a mistake. I think that we're too caught up in offense first. So there's better defensive players that don't get in because they're not as good as on offense as they are on defense. And so they don't play as much. And so we have a lot of offensive minded players who aren't inclined to defend the way they can. But every year come playoff time, we see the real thing. And it's also easier to lock in 30 teams, 29 other teams. You know, you don't really know tendencies as well as you might in the playoffs when you see the same team all the time.
No, that's perfect. Love that. Love that breakdown. All right, this last one comes from our Daryl. He would love to hear a compare and contrast of players that get their 3 to 4 year development in the G League, the NBA and the G League, versus those that stay in college longer and get their development in a college setting, specifically how Jaime Jaquez fits right in with Miami.
The last time I saw a study, which was a while ago, a decade ago or so, there was a basically an examination of every player, how they did in the NBA and how many years they played in college. Or back then, the study was done recently enough to when you didn't have to go to college like LeBron, okay? All the best players didn't go to college at all. And the next year was went to 1 year, then it went 2 year. Like, it's a myth to think that college has some kind of monopoly on player development. That's for sure. It's a myth. There is some benefit to some players to staying. Jaime Jaquez does know how to play. The idea that had he gone to the NBA 3 years ago, if a team, this is where the NBA fails, I think in many cases, had they been able to project 3 years ago, this is what he would look like in the fourth year, which would be his rookie season, but it should be his fourth year of NBA now. Then I think he'd be just as good, if not better, than he is now, because they learn how to play in the NBA too, especially if the G League's used well and you have assistant coaches focused on development. Their colleges, J.J. Redick said this on a podcast a while ago. He was watching a game with a friend. It might have been last season. I don't remember. But I think it was the week one of this season. And he said, me and my buddy, who haven't played college basketball in a long time, the coaches that we've seen coach against us and now are coaching still in college, we know all their plays. Nothing's changed. That's very true. The same programs run the same shit all the time. When they change coaches, then the franchise can change the program. You know, the offensive, defensive strategy will change. So I think that there's a benefit to some players to stay. There's a benefit to some players to leave. And development can happen in both college and the pro level. I don't love it in the G League, more or less, but I certainly allow for the possibility of that to happen too.
Love it. Guys, this is a sampling of what you get from Coach Thorpe's Big Basketball Brain if you send in great questions. Again, that is truehoop at truehoop.com, T-R-U-E-H-O-O-P at truehoop.com. All right, David, it is time to talk about quarterfinals of the in-season tournament. We're in the knockout round phase, so you win, you advance. You lose, sorry, no trophy for you. All right, first game, we got Boston Celtics at Indiana. Boston, of course, the number one team in the NBA. But Indiana was electric in their group stage of the in-season tournament. So the Pacers are number one in pace, first in offensive rating, and last in defensive rating. Celtics are last in pace, fourth in offensive rating, but first in defensive rating. In terms of injuries, Kristaps Porzingis is out with a calf for the Celtics. And for the Pacers, Obi Toppin and Tyrese Halliburton are questionable. My guess is they're going to play. This is like one of those, David, and you know, as growing up, you were a boxing fan. Styles make fights, right? One team loves to race up and down the floor. The other team does not. What are you seeing in this matchup?
Yeah, the whole styles and strategy stuff, I noticed that stuff. But once the game starts, like I was a boxing fan when my papa was alive. Once the fight starts, it's on for whatever's happening is happening, right? Nobody expected Ali to do the rope-a-dope. Pretty smart move by him. So I have one pretty amazing stat. Indiana was down in Miami for 2 games in 3 days. I was there for one of the games. Here are three of the four halves that they played scoring-wise. 65, 73, and 79. Damn. And a half. And by the way, in two of those halves, Tyrese Haliburton didn't play. So their starting point guard in the second game went 1 of 9 from the field, Andrew Nembhard. He had 11 assists, no turnovers, and a double-figure plus-minus when he was in the game. Played great defense. His backup, TJ McConnell, had like 18 or 20 points and just manhandled the Heat. Like they should be calling them today about a trade. Like right now, he'd be a good point guard for them. So Indiana can really score. I thought Tyrese was sick before that last game, which right away I thought Miami flew. I don't know what happened to him. I read somewhere today, maybe a knee. That's new. I did not hear that.
Because on ESPN, it just says it's an illness. It didn't say, because normally if it's a body part, they'll say.
I saw somewhere else where it said knee, and I was really surprised at that because that's not what I had heard. I heard it was just an illness. So I read it was just an illness. So I think that – so Boston played Indiana without Tyrese before. I think the final score was 195-74. It was some embarrassing. I think they won by 50. I'm not kidding.
No, it did.
I think it was like 154 to 104, something like that. But it felt like 195-17. They just, Indiana couldn't guard. Indiana doesn't guard. They do a great job of limiting the three-point shot Indiana does, but they give up more points in the paint than any team in the league. That matters in this game because with Porzingis, even though he's not, you know, the world's best paint scorer, he's a good one. He's a threat. He's not there.
Right.
Indiana might not pay as much a risk in taking away the Boston threes as they might otherwise pay. Obi Toppin has played well in Miami. That would be a loss for them. They have a deep team, Indiana does. I'm inclined to think that it's easy to pick Boston. And again, and I'll say this up front, in any one game with the world's best players, like, I don't know how anyone bets on these things. there's no way any of you know better than I who's going to win this game. And I have no idea who's going to win this game. That doesn't mean I don't have an inkling. Mm-hmm. My gut tells me, just based on all the data I've seen and watching these teams play so much, I think Boston's going to walk into a buzzsaw atmosphere, which I don't think is all that common in December in the NBA. The Indiana hasn't played a playoff game in a while, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think that part is not nothing. It's not nothing. All of Boston's players are so experienced. They played road playoff games before, but not in December. Mm-hmm. And so this is we'll see the same thing in Sacramento. This is an interesting thing a December game that's going to have a playoff-like atmosphere between two teams that are projected to go to the Final Four. Only one is in Boston. So I just think Indiana's on a roll. They actually, in the first game against Miami, they gave up a million points in the second half, but they roasted them for, 65, I think, in the first half. They really have a hell of an offense. So Boston's got, you know, those two guards can really guard. Mm-hmm. That's really, if you want to look at styles and strategies, it's can Drew and or Derek really stunt Tyrese's or curb his efficient, productive scoring? And I think that in the playoffs, they would be able to. But we talked with this off air yesterday, or texted about it. They've had very little time to prepare. I'm telling you, teams are not overwhelming their players with information for this one game, Gerard. Because they have to deal with the next game. I was texting a player who's playing this next 2 days. Like, this isn't one and done. The tournament's one and done, but you'll play next game. You're right. Still going to have a game this week. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the end of the world. It's not that kind of pressure. So you have to recognize that. And I think that, like, Boston, they may come out smoking, but the crowd's going to be crazy. And that matters to how Indiana plays, because they really spread you out and shoot the lights out. I mean, Toppin can shoot. Turner can shoot. Turner has not played great of late. That's a concern for them. But then there's also the thought of, well, maybe with Porzingis out, maybe Miles will do a little bit better. I'm not so sure. He's really been kind of perimeter-based lately. Mm-hmm. But I do. I think it's the best combination of best team versus worst team. And yet, Porzingis out if Tyrese and Toppin both play at home. I mean, the Boston crowd, if it was in Boston, it's just a game in December.
Right.
For Indiana, I just think it means more. So I give them a slight advantage in this one game.
I love it. So you mentioned the crowd in Indiana. So the last time they were in the playoffs, Paul George and Roy Hibbert, I think, were playing for them. Yeah. Yes, Paul George used to be on the Pacers, kids, for those of you that don't remember that. That was a while ago. And Tyrese Halliburton has said this, David, numerous times. And he's like, I've never made the playoffs in my entire NBA career. We got a chance to win something. I want to win this thing. So I think it's going to mean more to them in that way. Because not that Boston guys don't care to compete. Of course they do. But Boston still has their eyes on a bigger thing come June, right? And I wonder, into your point, the one game scenario that, and Boston historically has had this problem of sort of, you know, taking their foot off the gas and not really being locked in for a full 48 minutes, that this can kind of, if they do these kinds of things in that buzzsaw atmosphere, they look up and they're like, how the hell are we down 20? What happened? And well, Indiana's doing their thing.
Well, of course, you're right. On the other hand, down 20 against the Pacers, as long as there's at least 4 minutes on the clock.
You got a chance.
50-50, you're going to be in a tie game at some point. Yeah, this is a really challenged team defensively. They're
last.
They don't stay in front of their guy. And their best defensive players come off the bench in Nesmith and Nembhard. Turner is okay at best at this point, especially with the sieve around him. Mathurin's a terrible defender. Buddy Hield's competing on defense. That's a plus. He's a big X factor. His ability to shoot the ball. When they steamrolled Miami, there was a stretch in the third quarter where Nembhard was at point guard, just diming up everyone. He made two shots the whole game, diamond guys up. And Buddy is he and Tyrese both look for Buddy a lot, as they should. If he's not making shots, Rick might take him out. Rick's done that before, Carlisle. But I think Boston will come out ready just because they are competitive. And I think for Mazzulla, he hasn't had a lot of playoff success.
Correct.
I think he's going to be minding his P's and Q's in a sense. Like, I think you'll see, this is my guess and what the NBA is hoping for. Coaches really coaching hard, not just standing and watching, which sometimes they'll do, which is okay. It's a long season. You don't want to wear your voice out. And what I mean is get your players desensitized to your voice. Yeah, I think of the four, it's the game I'm most excited about, which is only because it's being played in Indiana with that crowd and the way Indiana plays. I think it's going to be fun to watch.
I love it. All right. And David said he's slightly leaning Indiana. So on a confidence meter, what are you saying? Like a percentage wise, like what's your lean percentage wise towards Indiana? 10%, 5%. What's your confidence in that?
0.01%. This is the best team in the league. And we just haven't seen a lot without Porzingis. And you make a good point. I might have given it 51% had you not just reminded me that most of those guys have not played the playoffs before. Mm-hmm. They're going to be feeling it a little bit too. Not that these guys haven't played important games. Nembhard played the NCAA finals. Tyrese may have gone this final eight. I don't remember his sophomore year at Iowa State. Like these guys, Miles may have played in the playoff game, I think. Turner, maybe.
I think so.
As a young player. Maybe not. God, it has been a long time. Do you remember, was it Danny Granger?
Yes.
Yes, Danny Granger. Wow, it's
back.
He's like 54 years old now. But that's how long it's been. Yeah. Rick Carlisle out of here. He wasn't even coaching the team.
That's so funny.
He wasn't even coaching that team. The Phoenix Suns coach was coaching that team. Right?
Right. It was Vogel. Yes, it was Vogel. See, this is the NBA. It's like dog years, people. You're just like, wait, what? No, that matchup should be exciting. I am going to lean Indiana, and it's because I like their style of play. And in any one game scenario, look, if this is a best of seven series.
No, we pick Boston for sure.
Right. But in a one game scenario, if you're not really. It's a hard thing to just adjust to on the fly. And if they're shooting, you might use this all the time. Indiana fires up a lot of threes. If it's a night where they make a bunch, you're just not going to beat them. That just is what it is.
But they also lead the league in paint scoring.
Yes, true.
So without Porzingis, Boston's got to guard that three. Indiana's going to be driving it a lot. That's a big deal for them. They want to fight for a great shot in the paint. Yeah, in any one game, being at home and all the things matter. I think it's going to be an electric situation. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm leading paces on that. All right, guys. Second matchup is going to be the New Orleans Pelicans at the Sacramento Kings. The Kings are 10th in offensive rating, 22nd in defensive rating. Pelicans 15th in offensive rating and 13th in defensive rating. Matt Ryan and Larry Nance are out for the Pelicans. Alex Len is out for the Kings, and Chris Duarte is questionable.
All right, so I don't look at, I mean, you just gave the stats, but that was this 20 game stats or 19 mm-hmm. games, whatever mm-hmm. they played. I tend to look at more recent play. And that's just how I've always done it. As I do, you know, as you know, I do this thing mm-hmm. with Zach Lowe every year, 8 years in a row, whatever we've done, 8 years out of nine or whatever, where we're doing all eight playoff series. And so I tend to look at recent stuff, how teams have evolved and whatever. It's harder with the Boston game because Porzingis is out. These teams should be pretty full strength, mm-hmm. right? A couple of things jump out at me when I look at it. One is Zion's playing has gotten better. He's been over, I think, 26 in every game, but one in the since maybe November 16th. Mm-hmm. That game, they beat the Spurs by 15. They didn't really. Everyone was open in that game, but he's looking better. He was really struggling to finish at the rim, just because he was rusty, in my opinion. And that is trickling up. His mid-range game, which is almost non-existent, still trickling up. Brandon Ingram can't make a three, but everything else looks pretty good, very good, not even elite at the rim. Before we get into stats, I look at New Orleans in the playoffs have been interesting. Mm-hmm. They have that two-headed monster with Ingram and Zion, and they've got some defensive players. Trey Murphy's back. We don't mm-hmm. know how healthy he's going to be. He's just played one game. Jose Alvarado gets after it defensively. They've got Valanciunas is a good offensive player. That leads us into the matchup situation. So I looked at a few different things. The Pelicans in the last eight games are fifth in points in the paint. Mm-hmm. And the Kings are 18th in defending the paint. That's a problem for me.
Yeah.
New Orleans gets a big advantage there. And that's because of Zion's just getting better. That number would be lower if Zion wasn't playing well. Who's guarding Zion? Who's helping on Zion? Not Sabonis in either case. That's a real issue. And so if you divulge too many resources devoted to Zion and his left-hand downhill drives, mm-hmm. you're leaving Murphy, Valanciunas, McCollum, that. Alvarado, if he plays a good amount, which I think he will, to guard Fox, that's a problem. This is actually pretty interesting. The Pelicans are third in points off turnovers, and the Kings can be sloppy with the ball, and that gives me another lean towards New Orleans, which is where my lean is that they the Pelicans defensively can get out and go. And Sacramento's going to have to be sharp in their offensive execution. Sharp in their offensive execution. And they're 14th in the league, I think, in turnovers. So that's a problem for me. Whereas Sacramento points off turnovers is 24th. I'm surprised at that. They don't really force as many as what you thought they might, at least I thought they might. Also, Sacramento's fourth in 3 points attempted. They want to shoot a lot of threes, right? They spread you out. They got Sabonis looking for cutters. He can score inside. They're not the Cuisinart, but they kind of are similar. Mm-hmm. No surprise Mike Brown came from
right.
Sacramento. The Pelicans are 29th in three-pointers attempted. And that's bully ball mm-hmm. versus the Cuisinart. Yeah, what's a knockoff version of the Cuisinart? I don't know. I'm not a kitchen guy.
You're like, yeah. So it's like, so Cuisinart is like the top end. So this is like whatever the Lowe's brand is, right? So it's like the next, the next level below, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so New Orleans also they're fourth in opponents' points off turnovers. They don't turn the ball over as much. They're 11th overall in turnovers total, and they get back pretty well. Ultimately, I would lean a little bit stronger. Confidence with New Orleans as opposed to Indiana, even though it's on the road, and I think the Kings crowd will be great. If you pick two cities that absolutely would be perfect to host games, I really think Indiana,
yeah,
Indianapolis, Sacramento. And Sacramento are great. Yeah, they're not main, you know, big big cities, like mm-hmm. top five population. Those cities can get bored. Miami, Houston, mm-hmm. this crowd can't, you know, of course they can be loud too. This crowd should be great. But when you've got Zion, it's like the Avengers having the Hulk. They have the Hulk on their team. And he hasn't had much of a stage.
No, he hasn't.
And so I think Willie Green is going to have his guys really excited to say, hey, we want to show the world what we got. You don't get that in the NBA a lot. Yeah. With the opportunity. That's what the cool thing about the NCC tournament, I think.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just in one game, I'm going with Zion.
You're going nicely in there. Okay. Yeah. Of course, I all agree with everything you're saying. I wonder, De'Aaron Fox kind of had his coming out last year in the postseason. For people who didn't know who De'Aaron Fox was, not us. You know, what does De'Aaron Fox do on this stage? To me, when Fox is playing at his best, he's as good a lead guard as anybody in the league.
He's amazing.
And first of all, he's fast, so you can't stand in front of him. And that three is falling, which it is, like, well, now you're like, what do I do? He's hitting threes, and he can beat me off the dribble. Well, then he's hard to guard, right? So if he's doing that, and they're getting the good stuff from Malik Monk, you know, this is all positive for them. I wonder defensively, can Davion Mitchell do anything?
He may not be playing.
That's right. He might be out. Yeah. So, you know, so that'll hurt them. And they've been playing bad defense anyway. So
And New Orleans in the last eight games, number seven in defense. And to be fair, there's a caveat to eight games because I'm not looking at strength of schedule. If they played seven terrible offensive teams, right, it's no surprise. But still, the swagger is there. It is something. Remember, last year they were dominating on defense for a while before the roof caved in. They're 10th on offense last eight games, 7th on defense. And the eye test is looking like, okay, they're starting to come. With Murphy back, I mean, he's such a great shooter. Mm-hmm. A lot of New Orleans players, if you look at individually, are playing pretty well. Yeah, I think they're the better team.
Murphy shooting well. Jordan Hawkins, we talked about last episode.
And he's a rookie, but I love him.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. I'm going to give it's a pick-em game for me. It's toss-up. I'm going to just give Sacramento the edge because of Fox and being at home. But again, and that three prevalence. If those three balls falling tonight, game over. Because they're going to take a ton. And the math doesn't work that way, right? When they're hitting that many, you can't catch up. All right, let's look at our next game. Actually, you know what? Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with the next two games on Tuesday night. All right, David, moving over to Tuesday night, we have the New York Knicks at the Milwaukee Bucks. Randy's New York Knicks, who are playing some good basketball. Jalen Brunson, RJ, Quentin Grimes, these guys are, Tibbs has got these guys playing well. Mitchell Robinson, geez, I mean, what is he, the best rebounder in basketball and defensive center right now? He's crushing it. Let's give you some quick stats on that game. Knicks 13th in the offensive rating, 5th in defensive rating. Bucks 8th in offensive rating, 17th in defensive rating. The last game was close. Bucks won by 5, needed a Dame Lillard takeover late to beat them. For the Knicks, Charlie Brown Jr. is out, but he doesn't play a ton. For the Bucks, Jay Crowder's out, and Pat Connaughton is day-to-day. I think Pat Connaughton will play, but if he doesn't, that's problems for them.
I forgot to say, I think New Orleans has beaten the Kings twice already this year. And so that's another reason why I like New Orleans some. Both teams are 6-2 the last eight. So they're playing well. The Knicks play the slowest pace. No surprise. They play boring bully ball basketball. I'm not complaining. You got to do what your roster is.
Right.
And Milwaukee's up to 5th in pace.
Yeah, they're going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee's got the 6th best offense in the last eight games. Just like the regular season fully, the Knicks are 5th in defense the last eight games. So that's really the battle is how's Milwaukee's offense going to cook against the Knicks defense. Mm-hmm. And so that gets me to Dame and Giannis. Dame hasn't played a game on a stage like this in some years. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be really locked in to that moment. With the guys on his team, I think he's going to have a chance to really shine. They can hide him against someone not named Brunson, mm-hmm. Probably pretty effectively. I worry about I worry about the Knicks just playing so slowly. If yeah. Milwaukee allows them to dominate that pace, that's a big, big help for New York. Sometimes playoff games do become a slog. I don't think this one will. I don't think these games, because it's just one game and you're not going to know their actions all that well.
Right.
You know, they're not going to overwhelm you. Maybe they will for the Final Four. I don't know, but they won't for this game. The coaches, meaning give them everything. And so I just think it's going to be more of an open game. And that's a big advantage, I think, for Milwaukee.
Yeah, we talked about it last episode. Who knew that the Giannis Dame pick and roll leads to good offense, right? Like that's a very tough thing to stop.
And one of the things New York really prides himself on is second chance points. They're top 10, number 9, mm-hmm. I think, last 8 games. Milwaukee's a very good defensive rebounding team. I think they're 7th in opponent's points on second chance. And so that mitigates a bit. When you watch the Knicks play, as someone who I do to help players, like one of my lead things always is you got to fight for the rebound. If you can't get it, don't let those motherfuckers get it. Knock it out of bounds, knock it away. Milwaukee's good at that. So that could really cause an issue for New York, who's going to have to score on the first shot. Mm-hmm. And even though Milwaukee's defense is just okay, it's just okay. You would think they'll be really ready. And I also think Giannis, after what happened last year in the playoffs, I would think Milwaukee is going to be really, I don't love them this year, but for one game, I mean, I definitely lean towards them as a home team in a very, very equal teams.
The Middleton factor is also important here, right? Like he's played pretty well this season. And it's coming off the injuries. You know, I wonder, can RJ Barrett, who's been playing well for the Knicks, you know, what does he help them do right now? Julius Randle, right? Like what, again, we know what Brunson's going to do for them. What do they get from RJ and from Julius? And I know that Tibbs doesn't like to do this a lot, but Emmanuel Quickley was, you know, really good for them last year. And I know you got two small guards, so you have problems there. But Dame's tiny too. It isn't like Dame's towering over anybody in their backcourt. So maybe you play some of Brunson and Quickley together, right? And see if you can really get your offense humming a little bit more. Spread the Bucks out, who aren't great defensively already as it is, besides Giannis and Brook Lopez.
But even Giannis at the point of attack is just okay. I hear a lot of guys talking about he's not what he used to be, a one-on-one defense.
Really?
Okay. At the point of attack, yeah. He's a tall dude. He can make up for it. He's got closing speed and mm-hmm. that length. Something else too. I learned a lesson. I've told this story probably once before. In 1994, my Florida Gators team, whose center was my high school player for 4 years, had Duke dead to rights, dead in the Final Four in Charlotte. I was there. Bill Clinton also. He came to the finals, maybe not the semifinals, but it was a packed house. It was the last game not played in the dome for the Final Four, so it was an intimate 20,000 people watching whatever it was, small number. And then Grant Hill's like, "Ah, fuck you guys. This is my game." He was by far the best player in college basketball. He was a senior. He had already been to 3 Final Fours. Okay. Yep. This was his 4th. He had won 2 titles already. And I walked out of the arena that day. We were the second game of the 2. The first game was Arkansas, Corliss Williamson beating Arizona.
Nolan Richardson's teams. Remember those guys?
They beat Duke in the finals. But mm-hmm. I walked off the court thinking, so that's what a blue chip player really looks like. My kid was a blue chip player too, high school to college. Grant was blue chip, college to pro. And if they're rested, they just in a 5-on-5 game have a big advantage. And so I think about that with Dame, mm-hmm. not with Giannis. We don't know about Giannis, with Dame. Like if he's got his energy about him, he can really light that team on fire. And that makes them really hard to guard in the paint after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Logo Lillard, if he's hitting threes out there, it's causing problems.
And their offense is playing really well.
They are. I'm going to give the edge to Milwaukee as well. I just think, you know, when you really just break it all down, and sometimes, as you said, David, in a one-game scenario, who's got the better guys, right? Like that often will tell you who's going to win.
Yeah, and one-game scenario and fatigue not being an issue. The Duke versus Arkansas game, Grant Hill was the best player in that game. Corliss Williamson was one of the best players in college basketball, and they were loaded, and mm-hmm. Scottie Thurman went crazy. You remember the Scottie Thurman game? My age does, yeah. Or your age even. And so going into Thursday or whenever they play, what are they playing in Vegas? Thursday,
then Saturday's championship.
Yep. Right. So the Thursday game, Dame, if they win this game, I would think will be fine. 48 hours? I don't know. It's a little bit different. In football, you might know this when you play on grass fields. the slower team that hosting the faster team would let the grass grow more.
Yeah.
It never made sense to me. But it until I realized, oh, it's all about timing. It's not about slowing your speed down compared to my speed. It's you have speed as an advantage, and we're going to fuck your speed up. We're going to be slower too, but your rhythm's going to be off.
Right.
It's so this is what two games in 48 hours, the second game might impact that. But I think in this situation, no team has played since what, Saturday night?
Yep.
Yeah. So it is second game in 3 days, but being the first game of the tournament, whatever, for the knockout round, I think we'll see a better Dame than we would be maybe on Saturday if they make it to the finals.
Okay. Cause then you gotta add the travel into that, right? They gotta get out to Vegas, which also be a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. The last game of the quarterfinals Tuesday will pit the Phoenix Suns at the Los Angeles Lakers. Suns are 0-2 against the Lakers this season, but led both those games in the fourth quarter and just collapsed on the stretch. No Devin Booker for either of those games. He'll be in Tuesday's game. Suns are 7th in offensive rating and 21st in defense. Lakers 19th in offense, 12th in defense. Bradley Beal is out, as we know. Eric Gordon day-to-day, expect him to play. Gabe Vincent did not play last game for the Lakers.
Same thing. We got LeBron. We got KD. Mm-hmm. Booker is definitely out.
You know, he's in. Booker is in.
Oh, Booker's playing.
Yes.
Oh,
he did not play the first two games against the Lakers. He will play. Yeah, yeah.
I thought, okay.
Booker's here.
I'm glad you told me that. last eight games, both Phoenix 6-2, Lakers 5-3. Phoenix playing a slow pace, 27th last eight games. Lakers up to 10th in pace. So they want to push it more. That's what LA's like to do with LeBron last year, too. They Ham wanted them to run a lot, which I thought was smart.
Because they're not great in the half court.
No. They're 24th in offensive rating in the last eight games. Phoenix is 9th. Lakers are 6th in defense, though, but Phoenix is 14th. Not terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty average. Let's see. Fast break issues. The points in the paint. And Lakers are really good defending the paint, but Phoenix doesn't really care. They're not a team that thrives on that as much. Neither team shoots a lot of threes, Gerard.
Yeah.
Phoenix 27th in attempts in LA and 28th, which mitigates the fact that Phoenix does a good job defending the three. They're 7th in threes allowed. LA doesn't care.
Right. It's not right. It's not what they do.
It's interesting. The Lakers are 28th in three-pointers allowed, which means Phoenix is going to have some threes. Beal, Durant,
Booker, Durant. Yeah, no Beal.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
You said Beal, Booker, Durant. Booker. Yeah.
Those guys are they're gonna make a difference. So, what do you think of it? Because I'm still unsure.
I'm leaning Phoenix because again, those two games they played against the Lakers this season, they were up double digits in the fourth quarter, and they just couldn't get into. We talked about this earlier.
Like, who didn't play in that game for Phoenix?
No Booker for either game.
Yeah.
And we talked about this. You said, well, what's the biggest difference, Rod? I mean, they had Chris Paul in the fourth quarters last year of those games. No one to set the table. Book has done an incredible job of being the point guard for this team. And so that steady presence is there. And look, Grayson Allen's shooting a three well. Eric Gordon's shooting well. Like, look,
but Gordon is questionable, no?
He's day-to-day, so we'll see.
That's a big issue. He's really playing well for them.
Very well. Look, he's a 14-year veteran, not afraid of taking any big shot in any moment. Like,
he's the opposite of being afraid.
And deep threes, not like deep threes. Look, if he plays for sure, I'm my confidence meter goes up even higher. But I'm leaning Phoenix. It's hard to beat good teams multiple times in a season, right? It just is.
Well, that's what people always say. Gerard, I don't know what the stats are. I know as a coach, I did not feel that way when I coached. If a team had kept beating us, it was a concern to me that we can't find ways to beat them. I blame myself. But if we keep beating you and then we play in the district tournament, so we feel good about it. Like we figured you out. So it's probably a 50-50 as it turns out. You know, close games are close games. So I want to be clear. Phoenix is missing whom?
Bradley Beal.
Beal and...
And Eric Gordon day-to-day. Gordon, but Beal for sure.
Yeah, if Gordon plays... Boy, I wish Beal was playing.
Oh,
if Gordon plays, I think Phoenix has I think they're the better team.
I do.
If Gordon doesn't play, LA is fine. LA. LA can be really bad. You know, the last thing on LA, John Hollinger, our friend and a guy I just love so much. John wrote a really good article about these games, maybe last night or this morning. And he asks the question, like, is this the last big stage we're going to see LeBron on?
With KD? Right? Like, that's...
Well, with KD, but just like man, yeah, they'll probably make the playoffs, no guarantee. But to do a one-and-done situation, they'll have to make it to a game seven. Not sure that's going to happen. The last time we saw LA on the big stage, they got swept.
Yeah.
Right? Sure, Denver swept them in the Western Conference Finals. So appreciate it, everyone. KD's got some years left. LeBron has years left, but dominating. LeBron is amazing. I'm going to mention him in a minute when we talk about our top 10 MVP.
We sure are.
But there was a time where there was a long, long, long era where he may not have won the MVP, but everyone knew he was the best player in any one series and could carry, he could take his and beat your, and he could take your and beat his, and no, like no one has done really since maybe Jordan.
Correct.
And that day is gone.
Yeah.
That day is gone. So in any one game, though, he's capable of being incredible. But so is Durant.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm giving Phoenix the edges because they really should be 2-0 against the Lakers. They had up double digits in fourth quarter, both games. Just turn the ball over. Stupidly late in all.
And we got the Vogel revenge game.
And the Vogel revenge game. He'll want to win this. Look, everyone, these guys want to win this thing. Trust me, they do.
Half $1 million. I don't care how much you're making. If you're making $40 million, I promise you, every single player making any money remembers when $500,000 seemed like a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And these guys are not seven. This is a really important point. As someone who deals with these very wealthy players all the time. None of them are 70, Gerard. Correct. None of them are old. I want to be any of their ages. They all remember when $500,000 seemed like all the money in the world. That doesn't mean every player is frugal with their money, although you'd be surprised at how many have gotten really good. I was talking to someone the other day about why is it we're not reading about bankrupt players like as much as we used to.
Gotten wiser. And,
huh?
They've gotten wiser.
Yes. And so as one thing they do, and I know this because I do get paid, it takes like five people to sign off on getting them to pay anyone. Mm-hmm. Like you got to have one agent, maybe a second agent, maybe an accountant, maybe the financial guy. The player always has to say yes. The systems are built in and that's made them mature. Mm-hmm. They all recognize what $500,000 means. And I just got to win a couple more games and we get $500,000 each.
And we get to go to Vegas. Win-win.
Yeah. Although I don't think there'll be a party. I don't
imagine they will be.
It's a good question. I talked to a player last couple of weeks who was in a real big party city and they played multiple games over the course of a few days, two games. And he didn't go out after they lost the first game. They want to win games, man. And they sometimes will get destroyed when they lose. I don't see much partying. Well, the losers, what happens if you lose tonight?
Yeah. So then if you lose tonight, you are back in the regular season pool of games. So then you'll get added onto the schedule.
So those games still are to be determined. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So I think the Vegas is for everyone else, but the players. It's warm weather. I will say I talked to a player who was in a warm weather climate recently. And he didn't tell me this. He told his dad, I'm getting a tan. Player wasn't white, by the way. I'm getting a tan.
NBA is mostly a winter sport, and mostly in cold weather cities, right? Yeah. So it is nice to get some warmth. I will say this too. This, you know, they always talk about like, you know, pros and like the love of the game when you're a kid and all the joy. This kind of brings a little bit of that back because this is like when they're AAU and like, all right, we got the national tournament in Vegas and we got to win this thing. It's going to bring a lot of that kind of feeling back because it's different, right? We're like, oh, we're going to Vegas for this game for the big trophy. All right, we're amped. Let's go do the thing. Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's not nothing. A lot of them played in Vegas. AAU is big in Vegas in the summer. Yeah, I think if Eric Gordon plays, I lean Phoenix. If he doesn't, I'll lean LA. Yeah.
Very good. All right, guys, at the season tournament, again, tonight will be Boston at Indiana and New Orleans at Sacramento. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, will be New York at Milwaukee and Phoenix at LA. And then Wednesday, we'll have normal slate of games. Thursday will be the semifinals in Vegas. You have your Final Four. Friday will have normal slate of regular season games again. And Saturday will be the championship game, only game played. I love that the NBA is doing that, giving these tournament games their own stage. There'll be no other games but the tournament games, and that's pretty cool. All right, it is now time for our version of the MVP ladder. And, you know, David and I, look, we just mentioned this player's name, so I'm sure he'll be in your list somewhere. But let's start at the bottom, David. We'll go 10 from 10 up to the top.
Number 10, I have a player on one of the best teams in the West who isn't – the top three teams in the West didn't make the in-season tournament. Mm-hmm. But I've got Anthony Edwards.
Woo, we are like almost simpatico. He's a number 9 for me. I got De'Aaron Fox in number 10.
Yeah, I don't have Fox on the list.
Yes, because you have LeBron.
That's correct. I've got Donovan Mitchell at number 9. You have Edwards.
I have Edwards. Mm-hmm.
I got Tatum at number 8, although he probably should be higher than that.
Tatum at 8. I have KD at 8, Tatum at 7.
Yeah, I have KD the other way around. Yeah, I have KD at 7. Yeah, it's you're probably right. Boston's playing so well.
I gave it to them because they got the better record. So I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, considering this isn't the end all be all just yet, I didn't really mind. I got a nice little swath here. I'm just going to quickly go a few. I've got KD, LeBron, Giannis, Steph. That's a nice. How many MVPs between those guys? That's a nice little run.
No, well, more than that. LeBron's got 4, Steph 2, KD 1, Giannis 2.
So I've got the MVP row.
That is MVP right row.
Yeah, I'm in
you,
corner.
You continue to give love to the older guys. Again, I penalize records. At Golden State has been struggling. By the way, 20-something point lead to the Clippers? Like, what the hell happened in that game? They got some things to work out in Golden State. I don't know what's going on over there. Luka's 6 for me.
Yeah, I don't reward players who aren't playing defense.
Well, fair enough.
He's just not doing it. If they suck, he's not playing defense.
Fair enough.
Yeah, if Luke, I will tell him. If he wants my vote, you got to care about defense more.
So that means Halliburton also not in your
top. That's correct.
Okay, because he doesn't
play defense. Well, you know what? The metrics on Halliburton are mixed because I've seen some that says he's playing defense somewhat well. But I couldn't put him above those other guys. And his team just wiped out Miami without him.
Sure did.
And then we have the same top three in some order. Mine is SGA, Embiid, Joker.
So I'll give you my top 4. Giannis is 4. Embiid 3, SGA 2, Jokic 1.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. These are the mix of guys who are in the running for all NBA and MVP. It will continue to shake itself out as teams go on streaks, injuries happen, all the various things. But we're seeing some exciting play. And again, look, got to again give it up for it. I mean, Giannis is still young, but that MVP trio of KD, Durant, and Curry, again, guys, appreciate these dudes, man. Like, still doing big things at their advanced ages, right? Things we didn't think were possible, right? When guys get into, I mean, Kareem at year 20, and I love Cap, wasn't doing this. Like, wasn't doing his usual thing.
As someone who's much older, there's pictures all the time on the internet of, like, famous shows from the 70s and their ages. Like, I just saw one of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all in their 30s and 40s. They look old as fuck. We've evolved as a species because of science that, you know, we can do more than we could 20 years ago at this age. So, hell, I just bought my first rower.
Yeah, you did.
I was swimming. Now it's getting a little too cold. Although maybe I can swim today before a cold front's coming. So I'm rowing. Yeah. These guys have every benefit, you know, and they're doing it. They take advantage of it religiously. Mm-hmm. And their bodies are what they are. And because of that, we get to see them play more.
No doubt. All right, guys, enjoy the in-season tournament. When we're back on Thursday, we'll know who the semifinalists are. We'll be talking Vegas. We'll be getting ready for the Final Four, and we'll have some stuff, regular season games on Wednesday night to catch up on.
Right.
All right, everybody, take care.